Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Modern Day Philosophers. I'm your host, Danny Lobel. Thank you for joining me. Thank you to this week's donator. We had a donator, a man who went to moderndayphilosophers.net and donated $20 or more, and in exchange will also be receiving a complimentary set of, well, set, I don't know if set is the word, but a pair of just a unit of tweaked audio earbuds. I'm sending you one in the mail to your home or your business or your P.O. box or your vacation resort. I don't know where you want me to mail it, but I'll send it to you. And you can have one too. That's right. Yes, you at home, you listening to this, go to moderndayphilosophers.net, make a donation. The donation helps me to keep going because I need the money, folks. I'm not going to lie to you. Things are pretty rough out here. Go to moderndayphilosophers.net, make a donation of $20 or more, and I will send you some tweaked audio earbuds for free. And by some, I mean one. Just one pair. Not a pair. Just, you know, a unit. Or you could go to tweakedaudio.com and type in the promo code MDP to get 1/3 off of your order, plus free shipping and a lifetime guarantee. They'll look out for you for the rest of your life, folks, if you get some tweaked audio earbuds. Nice to have someone having your back, isn't it? Now, before we get into the show today, I want to tell you that if you're a small business owner, and you might be, I think you are. Are you? Do you have one? If you do, then guess what? You might be looking for some financing, and I suggest you look no farther. I suggest you call the good people at Snap Advances. They are a common sense business funding company. Common sense, folks. They can have up to $250,000. That's $250,000. That's a lot of money. $250,000 in your account in as little as 48 hours. There are no personal guarantees required, and repayment is based off of your cash flow. A low personal credit score is not an issue, so you might be freaking out. Man, I'm a small business owner. I keep the books so good. I do everything. I just try to make a good, honest living, bring home some meat and potatoes to my wife. What can I do? I screwed up my credit in my youth. I was crazy. I was wild. I was a wild man. I was a recluse. Well, don't worry about it. Snap Advances evaluates your business based on your business's track record, not your personal credit history. Boom. I personally know several people who have successfully used Snap Advances. That's true. I do. And they couldn't be happier. That could be true. I don't know. I actually have not strapped them into some kind of machine with a happy-o-meter device where their happiness is measured, and there's a bunch of people having them take polygraph tests, and they say, is it true that you can't be any happier? And they have German scientists going, and they say, yep, that's true. They can't be any happier. That is conclusive of our research here. No happier. It's impossible. They can't be any happier, but I don't know. They seem pretty happy about it. Not only can they get you the money you're looking for fast, but they're funny guys. I know them. They're friends of mine, friends of the show. So give them a call at 877-557-7627. Again, that number is 877-557-7627. Call the guys at Snap Advances. Do yourself a favor. Get yourself a small business loan. Do it today. $250,000 can change the way you do business, I think. You can maybe you'll be able to take your small business and make it change the world. You want to change the world? Maybe you could be the next Jim Henson. Which brings me to a sad topic. John Henson, son of Jim Henson, and a master Muppeteer himself, has passed away this week. And I want to dedicate this show in part to him. And it's a coincidence, by the way, a sad coincidence, that Maz Jobrani and I, on this show, wind up talking quite a bit about Muppets for a little while. And then this happened. Not planned, but in a sad way, it worked out well in terms of remembering the man and doing something to honor him. Another sad and tragic loss this week was the loss of Sid Caesar. Sid Caesar, one of the most iconic people in comedy, one of the greats, somebody who gave starts to Mel Brooks, Woody Allen, Carl Reiner, many others, influenced them, and who in turn influenced so many comedians that it probably would be very hard to find a comedian who, either with or without knowing it, was influenced by Sid Caesar. So Sid Caesar shall be remembered, and his death is sad. It's a sad thing. It's a sad thing for the comedy world. I remember as a kid, my grandma showing me tapes of your show of shows, and at the time I'd been messing around with a whole bunch of fake languages and different dialects. And then when I saw Sid Caesar do it, I instantly felt a connection. And when I saw how brilliantly he did it, I was very inspired. And so you heard me doing that German scientist earlier. That was also a little nod to the great Sid Caesar. Sid Caesar nach Detroit. Als einer der Furcht, der 91 years old, und seit der Furcht der Show of Shows, mir zeinen remembern tot fraten. That was a little eulogy in fake German to Sid Caesar. All right, everybody, you ready for the show? I know I am. Here it is, the intro song, followed by my talk with Maz Gibrani. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Hey, testing. I'm here with Danny.
I'm here with Maz.
Talking philosophy.
Is Maz the right way to say it, or is that...
Yeah, Maz is right, yeah. Short for Maziar.
Maziar?
Yeah.
I never heard of the name Maziar before.
Well, it's a Persian name, that's why.
But is it a common Persian name?
Not really. It's not like Ali or Muhammad or Hossein or nothing.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, so it's not John or Mike, but it's more like Evan.
It's an Evan. You're the Evan of Iran.
Yeah.
Iranian Evan. So how do you feel about the mic check? Was this
That was a successful mic check. Yeah. Felt good to me.
What was your favorite mic check? Do you have a favorite mic check you've ever
done? I don't really remember mic checks, to be quite honest, because they're kind of meant to be the test before the real thing.
Mm.
You know, maybe I should start paying attention to mic checks.
I think you could tell everything from the mic check.
I think you're right. I think that's part of the process. You got to embrace the process.
A good mic check, a good strong mic check.
It's a great show.
It's a great
great career, great life. All come down to one mic check.
I always know if it's a weak mic check, the whole night is fucked.
I quit. I just quit. I'm not even going to do this, man.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you here.
Thanks, man. Good to be here.
You know, I've seen you many times over the years. And
yeah.
Phenomenal.
Thanks, man. Phenomenal. Yes, I use that word often when I describe myself.
A phenomenally funny guy.
Phenomenally funnily. Phenomenally. I think that's a good word to use.
My next guest is a phenomenally talented actor.
I'm feeling phenomenal tonight.
I wonder how long till people pick up. You know, I like the show, but you know, he uses phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Da, 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 da. Remember that song? Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I watched it several times with my kids now.
I rewatched it recently.
It's pretty funny.
I see it differently now.
What do you see it as?
So you got these two phenomenons, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the other guy who is coming in.
Yeah.
And he's trying not to conform to the song.
Yeah.
But I see these two guys as like the executives that are sort of trying to put everybody in a box.
Oh, nice.
And they're just saying, just do the phenomenon thing. That's what everybody wants.
Talk about philosophy. Look at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he comes in and he goes, and they look at him like, no, that's not. And he's saying, look, maybe people would like.
Yeah, yeah,
and they're like, no, just do what works.
Uh-huh.
And eventually, you know, he just gives up and winds up phoning it in.
Yeah, he starts leaving and Kermit goes, it's for you. And he picks it up and he goes,
he literally phones it in.
Yeah. Wow, I never saw it. I'm going to start looking at it differently now.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I feel bad for that guy because that guy's the artist.
Yeah.
And those other two are the suits.
Wow, that's an interesting one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I never thought of that. Manamana, do, 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 do. Manamana, mom, manam, mom, mom. Or maybe he just can't sing. Maybe that's his problem. Maybe they're just two trained singers. Mm-hmm. We're saying this is phenomena, and the guy just can't sing.
So he's just ruining it. But then
I'm just flipping it on you for a second.
No, you're right.
As a possibility, because I mean, I like your philosophy. I'm just saying in case there's another way to look at it. Then he gives up and he starts leaving. And then that's when Kermit says, it's for you. And maybe it's those two pink people or whatever they are, puppets, feeling like they don't want to give up on him. So they're like, we will even call you and try to bring you back into our
band. Well, he calls
band.
Them. He calls them.
No, no. As he's leaving, Kermit goes, it's for you.
Right, yeah. He gives the phone to them. But he's the one who calls. It's the crazy guy calling the two others.
I thought it was the pink guys. I thought the crazy guy starts leaving and Kermit says to the crazy guy, it's for you. And he picks it up and he goes, mana, mana.
No, no.
Are you sure?
Yeah. The crazy guy leaves and then the phone rings and Kermit picks it up.
And says it's for the pink guys?
And gives it to the pink guys. He goes, it's for you.
And then what does the guy say at the end? Mana, mana?
And they kind of look at each other like, this guy again.
Oh, so then maybe you were right. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. But he just conforms at the end. That's what it is.
I see. So he calls and finally says, I got it, Manamana. And they're like, huh?
I see him as a misunderstood artist.
Yeah,
that's trying to break the mold. And here's these two dummies that are like, look, we only know what works.
Network executives versus comedians. That's what you're talking about, right? That is possible. That is very possible.
Don't get too creative, buddy. Just do the manamana, and that's
it. Play to the middle of the country.
But you might be right. Maybe he genuinely sucks.
Yeah.
And these two are classically trained manamanas.
Maybe they are manamanas, and then at the end, the guy calls, and he gives them a manamana, and they're like, oh, God, this guy's horrible.
Told him to leave.
Yeah.
What a pest.
Yeah, could be that. You know? It's an interesting... And so we could do our own called Phenomena.
Phenomena. See, but I think people would get pissed off that they'd be like, he's using the word phenomenal too sparingly because it's phenomenal is a phenomenal word.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And if you ruin it, you take the power.
Well, there's like, I think it's like, I think like surfers and skateboarders and stuff use words like phenomenal, bro. Like they use like, I mean, I've heard people sometimes use like awesome is one that's constantly used. Awesome. How you feeling? Awesome. How was it? Awesome. Was it really that awesome? Was it awe-inspiring? Was it that amazing that you were awe-inspired?
So awesome is ruined.
Ruined. Awesome is ruined. Brilliant. Know. Oh, that guy's brilliant. Is it really brilliant?
Especially in the UK.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. No, brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. Everyone's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's because of that stupid accent
of
theirs.
Brilliant. They're not that everyone's brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. Come on. You're a bunch of idiots.
So...
That's funny.
I think that's a good time to launch into to our philosopher.
Sure, philosopher. Do 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 do.
Philosopher.
You got some cool pictures around here, man.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I'm trying to clutter it up as much as I can.
Yeah, I like that. I'm into it.
I think the more stuff there is around you, the less it all stands out and the more you kind of feel like you're in the presence of something.
I like stuff on walls because you go look and you're like, you ask questions. What is this? How'd you get it? Do you know the guy? What happened? Blah, blah, blah. Are you a fan? You know, you ask questions. Whereas I'm not like right now, our house is pretty empty in terms of decorations, pictures and stuff. And I'm a little bummed about that.
How long have you lived there?
4 years.
Okay, that's not excusable.
No, yeah. My wife keeps saying she wants to put pictures up. She never does. I say I want to find pictures to put up. I'll do it.
You're going to have to make a picture Sunday.
Picture Sunday.
A picture perfect Sunday.
That's what we're going to do.
A perfect picture Sunday.
Perfect picture. So what's the philosophy? What do we got?
Okay, so the philosopher that Alex picked for you is a Persian philosopher.
Yes.
As you are a Persian comedian.
Yes.
And his name is Al-Farabi. Am I saying that right?
Al-Farabi. I don't know Al-Farabi.
Al-Farabi.
Because we have some famous poets, but I thought he would go there, like Rumi or Hafez. Rumi's big right now. Rumi, even people in the West are reading Rumi.
Yeah.
It's all in poetry, and then they philosophize. But go ahead. What does Al-Farabi say?
Al-Farabi. I like the way you say it. Were you born?
I was born in Iran. Yeah, and then I left when I was 6 and grew up in Northern California.
Are you Iranian Muslim?
I'm not that religious. My family would be Muslim, probably, but they're not even that religious, so we're not religious. You know.
Even in Iran, they weren't religious?
No, we weren't. Like, we were very secular. A lot of Iranians are very secularized, and then you know you have like one relative in that family who whatever prays, but the rest of us were just kind of having a good time.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
See, my perception of Iran, never having been there, is that everybody's religious.
No, a lot of people are not. A lot of people are turned off by religion, especially because of what happened to the government after the revolution, and that it became this religious government. So a lot of people don't want to be told what to do. And Iran, originally, the original religion was Zoroastrianism, which was the first monotheistic religion. And the idea behind that is the philosophy behind that is it's good words, good thoughts, good deeds. That's it. That's like their Ten Commandments. Good words, good thoughts, good deeds. Hmm. Practice those three and you'll be good. You'll be fine.
I think you only need good thoughts, because if you have good thoughts, you'll probably have good words and good deeds.
Most likely. Most likely. Not always. But yeah, so the idea is that... So a lot of Iranians kind of still, I think, not that they don't consider themselves Zoroastrian, but they adhere to a lot of those philosophies over even Islam. So it's an interesting country in that sense. But I mean, you know, like I think the more traditional Iranians, like if you were to go to like a more like middle class, lower class, you're going to get a lot more just Muslims that are just more hardcore religious.
You think it's because they need something more?
A little bit of that, yeah, definitely. I think that's part of what helped the revolution happen, was that the Khomeini came in and said, hey, look, you guys can, you know, the Shah's been taking everything that you guys deserve. You deserve more. So, you know, we're going to get it. And then once the revolution happened, it turned into a bloodbath, and it didn't quite go as planned in that, or as promised.
Yeah, these revolutions never run smoothly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like it's always. I mean, that's always the case. The philosophy before the revolution sounds great. It's very utopic. Everyone's going to get everything. Mm. And then as soon as people come in power, they go, well, you know what? Before we get started, we need to execute a few hundred thousand people. And then, oh, then we're going to start a war.
Yeah.
And then it's just crap. It's hell.
It's like a gym membership.
It is like a gym membership in many ways. Starts out, you get a good week.
Yeah.
And it's just forget it.
Wait a minute. What do you mean I can't freeze the membership for a week?
Well, you got to give 1 month notice if you really want to, you know, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, all starts out so good at
all
the gym.
All starts out so good.
Hopeful.
Yeah.
Next like, thing, you just went out.
Yeah.
You're not getting going anyway.
Getting a gym membership is like a revolution. You're right. You're right. A lot of people got to die.
Definitely a lot of sweat and tears.
Sweat and tears for sure.
Yeah.
And it stinks. Really stinky.
LA Fitness.
LA Fitness.
And what was the name of the revolution?
The Iranian Islamic Revolution.
It was just called the Islamic Revolution?
Yeah, of 1979. Or the Iranian Revolution of 79. Or LA Fitness of 79. It's one of those three. So what's this guy say?
Okay. So let me read you a little bit about him. Abu Nasir Muhammad Ibn Muhammad Farabi.
Okay.
Does that sound right?
I think so, yeah.
Do you think I can get past in the marketplace?
Going to have a tough time. Yeah. They might see you as an infidel, but you tried.
I tried.
Yeah.
I'm like part infidel, you know, a little.
Part infidel, part hustler, part trying.
At least they might assume that I sell car stereos. If I do it,
sure. No, you well, got the right beard for it. You got the right beard for it. The right hairy chest for it. You'd be welcome with open arms,
my friend. This one is very good sound. Very good sound,
my friend.
Known in the West as Al-Faribis, he lived from 872 till 951.
Okay, that's about 75-ish.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a renowned scientist and philosopher of the Islamic Golden Age.
Mm-hmm.
He was also a cosmologist, logic.
What is this? Logician? Abu Ali Sina. Let me see what his name is. Is it Abu Ali Sina? Is that his name?
It's in Arabic there too. I don't know.
Abu Nasir Muhammad Ibn Muhammad Farabi for other recorder. No. Because there was an Abu Ali Sina who was similar. So he had like scientists, and he was like, maybe they were all scientists and philosophers. He was also a cosmetologist. He did facials. Cosmologist, logician, which is a magician with logs. That's what a logician does. And a musician. Wow.
I'm a logician, a musician.
He's got a lot of shins. Through his commentaries and treatises, Al-Farabi became well known among medieval Muslim intellectuals as the second teacher. That is the successor to Aristotle, the first teacher.
Wow.
All right. Very good.
So what was the name of the religion you said was the first monotheistic?
Zoroastrianism.
See, I've always learned as a Jew that it was Judaism.
No.
I didn't know that this was a dispute.
Zoroastrianism was the first Zoroaster.
I'm going to have to take this to my local rabbi.
Go to the rabbi. Be like, what's up with this Zoroaster dude?
Who told you about that?
Yeah. You were supposed to find out. No, they were actually Zoroastrian. Then their religion is the Parsis, like Farsi, but Parsi, And I think that Freddie Mercury's family was from there. They were Parsis. Yeah. And the Parsis, a lot of them are Indians that had come from Iran and they moved to India.
Huh.
And they continued to be Zoroastrian. So there you have it. Yeah, a little bit of history.
It's good. Good history.
Yeah, man. So what's this guy say?
In his discussion of the first cause, God, Al-Farabi said that God cannot be known by intellectual means such as definition. The words we use to define a thing constitute its substance. Therefore, if we define the first cause, each of the terms we use would be a cause for its existence. This is impossible with God because the first cause exists without being caused.
Oh, this guy's smoking a lot of stuff back then. There's a lot of cause and a cause. Yeah, I think he's trying to say that, is he trying to say that God exists or God does not exist?
I think he's saying God exists, but we can't intellectually understand him.
Yeah, he exists, so don't try to explain it. Just accept it.
Yeah. But I think it's more than that. I think he's talking about almost about language, about defining things. Because, like, if I ask you what a table is, you can see a table, so you can define it based on, but you can't define something. Can you define something you can't see? I wonder this a lot. Like, for instance, do you believe that we have a soul?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think about that too often.
But then how do you define a soul? Because no one's ever seen a soul.
Yeah, I guess a soul is, I mean, by definition, it's the part of you that's not the physical part of you. So it can't, just because it can't be seen doesn't mean you can't define it as something. I mean, that's the definition of the soul, right? Is that it's a part of you that you can't, that can't be seen, that some people believe will exist in other lifetimes. Some people believe that it is, it's more part of your inner energy. You understand? So I think you talk about it, but I guess God is the ultimate force in that sense, because you sit there and you go, well, that's even beyond soul, and that we cannot see God. So how are we going to define it? But then I guess the people go around defining God all the time in their own terms. You know, somebody says God is a Jewish God. Someone says a Muslim God. Someone says it's a Christian God. Somebody says God is nature. I mean, so that's the definition, I suppose.
Yeah. I was just thinking about this morning. I was thinking about if every person is a piece of God, like I've discussed on the show before, the idea of us all being cells in the body of God. If you're to understand that there's a oneness of the universe and everybody and everything exists as a part of that thing, then none of us really exist because only that thing exists.
Right, we are the parts of that thing.
Right.
So we do exist then, because you're saying we're the cells. If we are the cells of the whole, then we do exist because cells are alive.
But there's no individuality to a cell, is there?
Well, there's both individuality as well as the bigger creation or whatever you want to say, the bigger body. So we're individual parts of a bigger part. So that's kind of like, speaking of philosophers, there's a Persian poet and philosopher named Sa'di, who back then they used to do a lot of poems, and he did a poem which talks about how we're all interconnected. And so it's an interesting poem because he talked about how we're all interconnected, but in the same process he's actually using the analogy of a body. This is how your body is all interconnected, and the idea is that if one person suffers, then we all suffer, and if you don't suffer, then you're not a human being. And the same thing again can be the analogy can be used for the body. So if you sit there and you say we're all part of God, and let's say I'm his toe, and I'm lagging or I'm doing something where I'm hurting, well, God will feel it in other parts. If you stub your toe, for example, or if you break your toe, right. You end up having to walk in a specific way that after a while starts affecting your knee, that then affects your hip, that then affects your shoulders. You know, so we're all intertwined, and we're individual parts, but we're part of a bigger thing. And I think that's actually an important thing for people to think about in life. I think especially in this modern day that we live in, with Twitter and Facebook and on our phones all the time and not really looking around, there is so much suffering and misery around the world that we can't just go blind to it, but we kind of are more and more blind to it, you know. Mm-hmm. Also being in the West, also being in a city like Los Angeles, you know, so you are an individual, but just by ignoring the rest of your body or the bigger body of God doesn't mean that that is not going to come back and bite you somehow on the ass, right, as an individual.
It's like we're sick and we're not dealing with certain.
Yeah, I mean, it's like poverty. I was talking about this with my wife the other day. It's like my grandfather used to say, you know, he said, I understand the thief because the guy's hungry and he wants to eat. So he's going to go rob somebody. And it's like with our society, you know, a lot of times we go, well, the guy's robbing this or he robbed that or he stole this or stole that. And I'm not advocating it, but I have to sit there and go, wow, well, I'm lucky that if I want to go eat right now, you know, like I've run out of cash right now, so I have to go to the bank. So I just go to the bank and I get cash. Mm-hmm. That's that easy. But if I didn't have cash, now what do I got to do? I'm hungry. Now I got to start thinking. So it's like I'm either going to go into the garbage cans or I got to go rob somebody or steal from somebody. So, and I'm not saying that that's an excuse to not do anything, but who knows what put that person in that situation. And so the problem becomes if I'm someone who can just go to the bank and get cash, then there's somebody who can't get that cash. If I ignore that that other person exists, it's kind of like the Republican versus Democrat philosophy or liberal versus conservative, where a conservative might say, teach him how to get his shit together, you know, buckle up your bootstraps and go get it done. Whereas the liberal might say, well, you got to help him out. You got to, you know, help him, give him some money and get him started. Mm-hmm. And there's probably a fine, you know, line in between. But the bigger thing that I'm trying to say with what we're talking about, the body, I think that if I'm somebody who sits there and goes, well, okay, look, I'm doing fine by myself. I don't need, you know, I'm doing okay. And then I ignore the other person, that will come back and haunt me at some point. You understand? Yeah. That will lead to a revolution or people robbing people or
at least a gym membership.
Or gym membership.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you're right. I as you're saying this, I'm also thinking about like infighting of, you know, we have just in, you know, within the idea of Muslims and Jews fighting.
Dude, that stuff is crazy. That's stuff. I'm actually writing a book right now, about my life and whatever. And then at one point, I was thinking about, you know, I want to do a bit about this. How we could, any of us at any given point, could have a tree fall on us or get eaten by a bear. Mm-hmm. You know, that could happen. These things happen.
Right.
People get eaten by bears and sharks all the time. Chances are something like that might happen to you. Chances are something unexpected will happen to you in your life. So if I know that there's a chance that I could be walking down the street and a tree could hit me, nature is against me in some ways. You understand? Like, mm-hmm. No matter what, the longer I live, the closer my odds are that nature's going to get me somehow.
Right.
So then why do I got to go out of my way to create my own man-made problems of, now I don't like you, mm-hmm, because your philosophy about your God is just a little bit off my philosophy.
Right.
They both love falafel. They both, what I'm saying? It's like you got so much in common. And then what we try to do is differentiate ourselves from the people that we're closest to all the time. Jews and Palestinians are, I mean, the Arabs come from the same place.
I've always thought that New York and New Jersey, you know, Scotland and Ireland, no matter whoever's most similar to you.
Yeah.
And you know what I think it is? It comes down to identity insecurity.
Yeah.
Because if somebody's kind of like you, then you're not that special.
Yeah. And also, it's also loving yourself and hating yourself. If you love yourself and none of this other stuff means anything, then you love yourself. But if you hate yourself and you have downfalls and you can't accept those downfalls, so then you go, well, you know why I have the downfalls? Because of that guy. Or look, I'm better than that guy. At least I got the right God. Mm-hmm. Sure, I drink and I rape and I pillage and do whatever else it is, but at least I got the right God. That guy didn't have the right God, and therefore I must kill him.
Or even with Jews and Muslims, it's the same God. It's
same
just
God,
a
yeah.
different way of talking.
And to then them. Here's what's crazy is, so they go, for example, like they'll say, like, okay, we hate Jews. Okay, great. All right, let's get rid of the Jews. Get rid of the Jews. And then they go, well, I'm Sunni. I hate Shiites. Oh, okay. Well, let's get rid of the Shiites. Right. Then the Sunni. Well, I'm this kind of Sunni. I'm not that. Or for, and you could substitute any religion in there. I just use that as an example. But you sit there after a point, you're like, when is this shit going to stop?
Right.
You know? And it's just, it's sad. It really is frustrating because, like I said, I think that we have so much that can happen in our lives that they're just natural. And, you know, and sometimes it takes deeper things. For example, it takes a Palestinian who is, you know, who's got a dying, whatever, relative, and they take him to the hospital and a Jewish doctor treats them and the patient does well. It takes that deep of a thing for that Palestinian to go, oh my God, not all Jews are bad, or vice versa.
Yeah.
You know?
It's when I was a kid, my brother Josh was my first brother to be born younger than me. And I used to hate that he would want to wear the same kind of shirts as me.
Oh, yeah.
He used to say, my favorite color is green. He used to say, my favorite color is green.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, you can't have the same, because that's how kids are.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just really a sibling rivalry based on identity. Like, why did I care if he also wanted his favorite color to be green? Because it didn't differentiate him enough from me, and I didn't feel special anymore.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So yeah. I think, you know, one of them has to give up falafel. Somebody has what to about, just stop eating yeah. falafel. We have
well,
to.
I think the opposite is, I think that they both need to mature and realize that more than one person can eat falafel.
Yeah, but if
I think that's what it is.
If I got to the point where, you know, within 30 years, I was able to say, yeah, sure, let's both have the color green. I don't care. And I've reached that maturity. But this has been going on for thousands of years.
Right.
And they still haven't gotten it together.
But that's what I'm saying. I think that you need, and probably, I mean, boy, I don't know what I don't know how you would do a study on this to find out if there's a bigger rift now than the past, or if it's like, if it's gotten better, or if there's more open-minded people. Like recently there was a thing. So, you know, obviously America had sanctions on Iran, and there was the idea that the Israelis might want to bomb the Iranians because the Iranians are trying to get a nuclear weapon, et cetera, et cetera. So some guy out of Israel created this Facebook page and said, we love Iran, this Israeli. And then he posted it on Facebook, and a bunch of Israelis posted it as well. And then some Iranians took it and said, we love Israel. And there was Israelis and Iranians sending each other these messages of peace via Facebook. And I think the guy's done a TED talk as well. But I think that kind of philosophy is what's needed more of. And I'm not sure if there is more of it or not in this world. But that's the mature philosophy, where the guy sits there and goes, why am I going to hate you just because you're across a border? And yes, I understand that maybe there's, if the government gets a weapon, then maybe there's a threat. But I still don't want to kill. Killing an Iranian should be the same as killing an Israeli in an Israeli or an Iranian person's mind. It's a death. That's why, for example, when we attacked Iraq, we would get the numbers from American troops killed, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. We never got the Iraqi numbers. And I think that's wrong. We should find out as a society how many Iraqis have died. Over 100,000, probably 200,000 Iraqis have died. So when you sit there and you sit back and you go, wait a minute, I have a family. I got a wife. I got two kids. And you think, God forbid, if that were my family, how would I feel? Of course I would have hatred to this other country. And then you step back and you go, so is it worth going in and bombing a country?
Mm-hmm.
Or starting a war, doing what we did. Because right now the big debate is, well, Saddam was bad to his people. Are they better off now than before? I don't know. I don't think so. So I think that we need to put the same value on a life no matter what side you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the maturity comes in. I think that's where two people having green, basically two people going, yes, our lives are valuable. That's what it means. Whereas when you're young, you go, no, my life is more valuable than yours because only one of us is allowed to flourish in this world.
Grow up, Middle East.
Grow up, Middle East. I think there's got to be more emphasis on education. Now, education doesn't necessarily equate a smarter population, but at least a more aware population. I think that
it's
helps.
All education. Yeah.
You know, or even it's, like I was saying, like this should be a program. I always said about this about America, but maybe it should be a worldwide program. If it would, I mean, you can't afford it. But it would be great if people at a certain age had to go live elsewhere and see how other people live. And it just opens your eyes. You go, oh wow, there's more than just my block.
Right.
So that when you're a hooligan that's getting ready to go beat up a guy because he supports Manchester United versus Man City or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you might sit there and go, "The hell am I doing with myself?" You know, there's people in Silicon Valley coming up with these crazy ideas and making billions of dollars.
It's incredible because you're right. You're absolutely right. And there's nothing that forces anyone out of their bubble. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Like, you can exist in your bubble, and that's okay.
Yeah.
There's no force that's going to take anybody out of their collective bubbles. And
often you run into people, the people that are probably, I would say, more small-minded are people that have not had a chance to travel as much. So you run into people, whatever the age is. I remember I met a guy one time in upstate New York who was like, yeah, you know, I've never been to California, never left New York, just been here. My whole life is like 67 years old. I'm like, how could you have not gotten on an airplane?
Yeah.
And he's like, I never had to.
They have a much more limited perspective.
Yeah, and he's probably somebody, if I were to tell him, like, you know, whatever, there's an Arab or something down the street, he'd be like, I don't trust those guys. That's that kind of guy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and it's really much more common than people think. I worked in an old age home, and I used to talk to the residents all the time, and so many of them, especially from that generation, I think our generation travels a lot more because it's more accessible, more affordable, yeah. But that generation, so many of them had not left the tri-state area, and they're now old.
Yeah.
And that boggled my mind. I wanted to shake them in their wheelchairs, but you know, that's how you
get
a lawsuit against you. But I would seriously be like, you never left Long Island. You're 80 years old. You never left Long Island.
It was a big deal. Like you said, back in the day, they used to get dressed. They used to like put on a suit. They used to pack. They had a reason to go somewhere. Now you just get a whatever, One World, whatever book, whatever it is, and you go. That's right. And it's I honestly think that there should be a mandatory program, or at least like if I could start a charity, like there's a million charities to do, but I would love to start some sort of organization that helps get kids that are, let's say, juniors in high school,
right.
You know, and go at least a few months to another country, especially if you could do it for kids that are underprivileged, living in a bad situation. If you get them on a plane going to live, you know, in Italy for 3 months, like a summer program, because mm-hmm. you can't just go 2 weeks. 2 weeks does not do it. You go at least 3 months. I did a year abroad in Italy when I was in college. It was awesome.
At least enough time to have visited all the tourist attractions and then have to face the real world.
That's the fear. Because look, as a kid, when you go to the tourist attractions, you're like, oh God, this is tiring. It's 2 weeks, whatever. But mm-hmm. if you have to like go and integrate a little bit and hang out and talk to, we had to live with Italians, you know, and they would tell us about the history of World War II and how Italy was involved and how America was involved. And you know, we'd gotten the American perspective. We'd never gotten the Italian perspective. So it's an eye opener. And I think it really helps create better citizens of the world. And I think that if I ever get around to it, that's the thing I would like to do, is get a foundation of some sort that would put money together and send kids junior year. That's a great, that's a perfect time. Junior year, summer, the summer of junior going into senior year, send them abroad, have them come back. I guarantee you they come back and they put their nose to the whatever grindstone or whatever it is. And they do a lot better than they would.
There's almost nothing better to open your mind up than traveling.
Absolutely.
I think you're absolutely right. And I gained a whole new perspective on America being on the road in Europe for a long time and getting their perspective of America. You can't, and this goes back to, you cannot examine a system from inside the system.
No.
Which is, you know, a big argument for God.
Yeah.
The idea is it's very hard to exist within any kind of bubble and or even yourself. It's very hard to see yourself.
Yeah. That's why you go to a therapist.
Yeah.
That guy sees you for you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if I would have only had a better perspective on myself 10 years ago, you know, I'd have a show by now.
Yeah.
A bigger show. I like this show.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd make money off of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
yeah. No, it's true. And I think that that it helps you understand the other. It's like Morgan Spurlock did that series. It was great. The whole thing where they would exchange places, you know, so that he would get a Muslim would go live with a Jewish or a Christian family, and a Christian would go live with a. I think that's great. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you got to do, is put you in the life of the other, so that you then it really reminds you that the other, all they want too is what you want. Mm-hmm. They want to eat. They want to get laid. They want to be secure. That's what people want in their lives.
And you'll find the people are the same.
Wherever you are, there is good and bad in everyone. That's funny.
You want to read some of Al-Farabi's?
Sure. What else is this guy smoking?
It's just good hashish, man.
Al-Farabi. La-di-da-di. It is characteristic of this science that inquires into numbers and magnitudes that the principles of instruction in it are identical with the principles of being. See, this is one of those things where you got to like reread it and reread it. This is why I sometimes would just lull myself to sleep in college rereading stuff. Hence, all demonstrations proceeding from its principles combine the two things. I mean, they give an account of the thing's existence and of why it exists. All of them are demonstrations of both that the thing is and why it is. Of the principles of being, it employs only the formal, that is, what the thing is and by what and how it is, to the exclusion of the other three. This dude was smoking a lot. For numbers and magnitudes in the mind and stripped from the material have no principle related to their genus apart from the principles of their being just mentioned. So he's just basically saying that by being, you are. What is he saying? I don't even know.
You know what's funny? If you would have submitted this as an essay in school, you'd probably get a letter home. Like,
oh yeah, like kid, this dude's doing some stuff.
The kid is crazy.
I mean, I guess what's part of philosophy is, I guess you got to go a little, you got to go deep, and then you get a lot of, sometimes the language doesn't even translate well, so that you got to reread it. I mean, that's why it's beautiful when you read, sometimes you read a work of fiction and it's so well written and you go, oh wow, that's really well written. And then you read philosophy sometimes and you go, this dude needs to work on his communication skills.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of that wherein, thereabout, whereupon.
But I think like that's code to like keep the, you know, keep the masses away from the good knowledge, you know?
Maybe. Yeah, but you gotta make it accessible. Like we go right back down to the phenomena. It's like you gotta play this stuff to the middle of the country so that people like me can understand what the hell you're talking about when he says that whereupon.
Yeah, that's
when it just by existing it exists. I'm like, yeah, I get that.
And that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to figure it all out to the point where I can make it accessible.
I wonder what it's like with this. I wonder how his parents felt. They were like, dude, what? You really just spending your time just thinking about the same shit?
Iranian parents wouldn't have it.
Oh man, this guy'd be in trouble. They'd be like, just go back to the music and the cosmetology.
The principles of being employed. I think he's saying that everything has to have, I think it goes back to before the idea of a definition.
That's right? It's that simple.
They give an account of the thing's existence and why it exists. Why it exists. That's the big thing. Why does this exist? Why does that exist?
Why does that exist?
Yeah, that's a question I'm always
asking. He's saying don't ask. He's saying it just exists.
I think he's saying ask. I might be wrong. I'm often wrong when I try to interpret this stuff, but I mean, they give an account of the thing's existence and why it exists.
He's saying by existing, it tells you why it exists.
Yeah.
He's saying don't ask because it just by existing, that's why it exists.
But sometimes I'm just always saying, why does that exist? What the hell is it? Why does that exist?
You know? Fariba, whatever his name is, he's saying, stop asking. Just accept it.
You ever on a show and you see a comic on a, why does that exist?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah. Well, what's he talking about?
What the hell is he talking about?
Why does that exist?
Yeah.
I just was in Marshall's and they had a snowball scooper for kids that don't want to pack their own snowball.
Oh, wow.
Why does that exist? Like
that exists because some guy had a kid and the kid tried to pick up the snow and was a pussy and the hands were cold. And then the guy goes, opportunity. So that's why in a capitalistic environment, we come up with stuff like that. And not always the best thing, but that's why it exists.
But it's just like another thing that separates humans from nature.
Yeah, but so is your phone. I mean, that's why do we have our phones? Our phones, everyone's got a phone and no one's looking around anymore as they walk around
right. In
Los Angeles, which actually can be a very beautiful place. I'm sure there's people up on hiking in Runyon Canyon on their phones all the time taking pictures.
Yeah.
All this shit we come up with is to get us further away from nature and get us to spend money and not think about the deeper issues like this guy did and think deep.
He says, since science does not inquire into them as being in materials, it does not deal with what is extraneous to them so far as they are not in materials.
Mm.
So again, I think he's talking about metaphysics here. Metaphysics, we have a definition here from Alex. It is the branch of philosophy that deals with the first principles of things, including abstract concepts such as being, knowing, substance, cause, identity, time, and space. And
wow.
We've definitely discussed a few of them here.
Definitely, definitely. And this made me happy that I did not study philosophy in college, because it would have hurt my head. Like, oh, God. Because one of the things about philosophers, I think they like to talk a lot, and they like to, obviously, got to keep talking. It's almost like, philosophy is almost like a bigger, it is like therapy, but on a bigger scale. Global therapy, exactly. Because when you do individual therapy, it's just you and your therapist talking about you and your problems and all that stuff. But now you're going to the world.
Yeah.
Global and historical therapy. So you got to sit there and be like, why did this guy do this and that? And the problem is that the globe doesn't speak. So you got to come up with the reasons. Right. So you got to ask questions.
Or if it does speak, it says, and hence for this, that.
Whereupon, wherefore. Oh my God.
The globe has a weird way of speaking according to these guys.
Very, very Shakespearean of the globe.
Well, we definitely discussed identity quite a bit.
Yes.
And again, going back to those cells in the body, I kind of feel like when Jews and Muslims are fighting, that's a cancer in the body. That's
absolutely.
Just cells attacking each other, you know?
You're right. You're totally right. You're totally right. That's cancer. Cancer is war. Cancer is war. I agree with you. Or war is cancer. I agree. That's, I just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't know why you would hate somebody just because of a certain thing. It's just, it blows. Even like when people go like North Korea's the bad guys. I'm like, why do you just believe and buy? Like those guys too over there probably want the same. There's some North Korean dude who's trying to get laid. That's all he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Just trying to get laid. And
only one?
I'm sure there's a few of them.
It's just one.
You know?
Yeah, it's kind of like what your grandfather was saying about the thief. Like,
yeah,
understanding the motivation behind the person is, you often find that what you perceive as bad is actually a sympathetic kind of a thing, you know? But
yeah,
maybe he shouldn't steal, and maybe there's a better way. Not maybe, he shouldn't, right?
Right,
but,
yeah.
But who's to say that he's capable of understanding that or doing better?
And who knows what his history is and what got him there.
And it goes back to also, are people inherently good or evil?
Yeah. Look, there are people that are inherently evil. And I think that maybe the people are born with certain inclinations, and then given their environment, it can definitely go that way. You know, if you were to grow up in an abusive environment your whole life, chances are as you get older, it's going to be easier for you to turn around and abuse somebody. So that's unfortunate. But I don't know. I think that most people are good, and most people have a similar desire. They want to be loved. They want to eat. And it's just understanding that. And then trying to open your eyes from time to time, and if you can help others, then help them.
As an Arab American,
Middle Eastern American, because Iranians aren't Arabs. We're not Arabs. And, not that that matters.
And a touring comic.
Yeah.
Do you find do you get hated on in America a lot?
No, I don't get it a lot. Not really. I mean, I'll run into some ignorance from time to time where,
like, people saying Arab.
People think I'm Arab when I'm not Arab.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. You know, you run into some ignorance, but I don't blame people because you know what you see on TV, you know what you've traveled and seen. And so if you've lived in a certain place your whole life, then you're going to you know, sometimes you go to a radio, early morning radio show, and the guy might do some stupid joke like, hey, you know, where's your magic carpet? Hey, you know, jokingly. And you go, ah, that's stupid, but whatever. but then you realize the guy really doesn't know much about the culture. And you can't expect him to. He hasn't lived there. He hasn't seen it. But I've never had flat out racism towards me where someone says, you know, go back to Iran. You know, but when I was a kid, when the hostage situation happened, I had a guy call me fucking Iranian, which is back then that was kind of what you were called. But nothing. I mean, I also have avoided certain places. I mean, I do shows in the South, but usually people come to my shows that know what they're getting.
Weren't you doing the Axis of Evil?
Yeah, Axis of Evil was a tour that we did with me, Ahmed Ahmed, Aaron Cater, Dino Bidala. And that ended in 2007. And I've just been torn on my own since. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kind of people were showing up to it?
That was also, you know, that was a good audience. It was a lot of Middle Easterners who I think were hungry for a voice like this because there was no one from our background doing stand-up, making fun of the stuff that was going on.
Do you think that's a cultural thing?
I just think that that's an American thing. I think that a lot of immigrants come to this country. It takes them a few generations to start breaking into the arts. So when you first come, you set up businesses, then you send your kids off to medical school and mm-hmm. other things that you want your kids to do. And then eventually your kids rebel and go, I want to be a painter and a comedian.
Right.
So I think it takes a few generations, and that's what we got to. You know, Iranians came to America in the late 70s. And so it's taken a while, but we're starting to see us integrate into these different arts. And I think that what happened was when you are a group that is somewhat persecuted in the sense of, or I should say, has racism against it, I think you're waiting for someone with your voice to come out and speak. And we were that. We filled a void.
It was kind of cathartic, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure it was cathartic. And so we would have them show up, and we would also have a lot of liberals show up at our shows, and it did very well. It helped launch all of us as stand-ups.
How much of your identity is tied into being
Iranian?
I was almost going to say Arabic again, but
Iranian, Persian, whatever. I mean, some of it is funny. People, I think people perceive, and maybe I would need to have somebody like you said, or from the outside, tell me what they see. But I think people from the outside, that I've seen that aren't analysts, tend to often say, oh, he's the Persian comedian, he's the Iranian comedian, and all right. that. But I don't see myself as a Persian comedian. I see myself as a comedian who happens to be Persian.
Right. Do you find it frustrating when just sort of being
a little, you know, it's a give and a take, because on the one hand, you sit there and you go, okay, cool. So if there's ever a movie written where they go, we need a bald, funny Persian dude, they'll be like, oh, get Maz Jobrani. So you're like, great, I've carved that out. But the bad part is if there's a, you know, they're looking for the FBI sidekick, your name doesn't come up. And you go, well, I could play the FBI sidekick. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that's not what they've envisioned. And I just did a film myself. I wrote and produced a film and starred in it. And we were casting. And it's interesting because going through the casting, I realized, oh, wow, people really do have, and myself included in this case, have an image of who that character needs to be. And they have actors in mind that could play those parts. So that's where the frustration comes in. But you also, part of it is also in this business or in life, I think you have to create your own opportunities and present yourself in certain ways. Like this movie that I did, I basically called it the Persian Pink Panther. It's called Jimmy Vestfoot, American Hero. It's kind of like Persian Pink Panther. I played a character. I play a Persian guy with a thick Persian accent. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it'll do, you know, some damage in terms of being seen. And it's possible somebody might see that and go, oh, I have this other character. He could totally do it and bring me in. Now, if I do another movie or another program where I'm not doing anything with an accent, but I'm funny, then they might go, oh, I didn't know he could do this. Let me bring him in. So it's kind of how you present yourself as well.
Yeah. That's probably the only way to break these preconceived notions is to show them. I had an eye-opening experience when my girlfriend's dad renovated a house and they were showing it to try and sell it. And I said, can I show it instead of the realtor? The realtor, I guess, was running late or something for the next hour. Can I show it instead of just saying, wait for him? And he goes, yeah, sure. And I got to play real estate agent for an hour.
That's great.
And I was amazed by how little how unimaginative people were. When I say, check out this room. And they go, well, where would we put the TV? I was like, what kind of a stupid question is that? Well, yeah. Why do you need me to tell you where you'd put the TV? But I'm like, oh, they just don't know where they would put. Yeah. I'm like, how about right there?
Yeah.
And they go, oh, yeah, that'd be a good place. But where would I put the couch? Well, you could either put it there or there. Why do you need me to answer this? Yeah. It wasn't one person.
Yeah.
This kept going on and on. People were so unimaginative.
Yeah.
And I kind of saw it as just a microcosm of the greater. I think that people like you and I and people in the arts forget that we really are more imaginative than a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. And also you listen, end of the day, you see yourself in one way and ultimately no one's going to come across and just pluck you and go, I want you to be Batman. Right. You have to come up with your own Batman.
You really have to spell it out for people.
Yeah.
I think that's what I learned from being a realtor for an hour.
Yeah.
You really have to tell people, like even in this business, you could say, hey, I could also play the sidekick in the FBI.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, I didn't think of that. Because you don't know where to put the TV.
I go on the wall.
You wouldn't know where to put the TV. How would you know that I could be the FBI?
That's funny, dude. Yeah, it's true, though. It's true. You have to know where you would put the TV and say that's where it's going to be and put it up. And it might not be the best spot, but at least you put it up.
Should we jump into the quotes?
Sure. Quote one from Al-Farabi. Particular scientist guy in this
Can you do it in a thick Persian accent?
Particular sciences restrict themselves to one of several departments of being. For instance, physics is the source of being affected by physical properties. No shit, Farabi. Metaphysics, however, knows no such restrictions. Its field is all reality, namely being. See, I don't even know what this guy's talking about. This guy in his he's basically a fan of metaphysics. That's what he's saying. He should have gotten a t-shirt that said, I love metaphysics. Particular sciences restrict themselves to one of several departments of being. For instance, physics is a source of being affected by physical properties. Metaphysics, however, knows no such restrictions. Its field is all reality, namely being. So he's saying metaphysics is all of everything that exists. Mm-hmm. That's all he's saying.
That's it.
That's his, this guy's, I'm already pissed. I don't like this guy. Come on, man. Give me something I could use in my day-to-day life. Being, here he goes again. Being cannot be defined, for it is self-evident, preceding all other concepts, and is the simplest of all. To define a concept is to analyze its content, and being, having the least content, resists all efforts to resolve it into simpler thought elements. Once again, because you are, you are.
Yeah,
I can't explain that, he's saying.
I think he's saying content is king.
Content is king. You are. Stop analyzing. This guy's the worst therapist ever. He'd be like, but yeah, I'm feeling sad. He's like, well, then that means you're sad. You're like, yeah, but I want to know why. Don't analyze it. You're just sad. It's like, okay.
It exists because it exists.
This one better be good. God is knowable and unknowable. Dude, evident and hidden. And the best knowledge of him is to know that he is something the human mind cannot thoroughly understand. This dude's trying not to answer the question. This dude, he has no answers. So he's
just
like,
dodging everything.
Yeah, he's like, you are what you are. Like, what?
You know it and you don't know. Yes and no.
Yeah.
Let's agree to disagree.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, he's dodging the answer.
He's a flip-flopper.
This guy.
Al-Farabi.
Al-Farabi. From now on, whenever I'm pissed, I'll be like, Al-Farabi. Oh shit. Al-Farabi.
Farabi. Oh.
Now I can go around saying I am what I am.
Yeah, yeah. If anybody asks.
Popeye
yeah.
the Sailor Man. I'll say, as Al-Farabi would say, I am what I am.
Yeah. Next time I go on an audition and if somebody says, but who are you? I cannot be defined. I'm definable and I'm not definable. Yes. I am and I'm not.
Please state your name. I am what I am.
Maz, thanks so much. This was great.
Thank you, Danny. It was fun, and you are what you are.
So are you.
Thank you. Manamana. Manamana.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning into the show. Thank you again to my guest, Maz Jobrani. Go check him out. Find out when he's playing in your town. And go see him. He's a funny guy.
please write into the show. thecomical@yahoo.com is my email address, and it really means a lot when I get your emails, and it makes me feel very validated putting all the effort into this show that I do when people write and say they enjoy it or tell me something related to them or whatever it is. I love getting your emails, and I always reply to them. So please email me. Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/moderndayphilosophers. See pictures of the guests, links to the philosophers, and quotes from their philosophy, and so much more. Go to moderndayphilosophers.net and donate. Please donate to the show. I told you I'll send you some tweaked audio earbuds. That's the very least I can do, but I do appreciate and do rely on these donations to keep going right now. So please go to moderndayphilosophers.net and click on the PayPal donate button. You can buy my CD, Some Kind of Comedian, on iTunes or Amazon to help support me and support the show, or go to standupcrap.com and get it there. And that's about all that I can think of right now, except thanks for being with me, and I hope you stay with me, and please spread the word on your Facebook or on your Twitter. Tell people about the show. Get the word out there, and I'll see you next Monday with another good show. I'm really excited for you to hear it. Thanks, everybody, and have a great week. Bye.